Hey, Danger. You're going to jail tonight for disorderly conduct, you understand?
For what, man?
For what?
You know I'm not gonna do nothing, you know what I'm saying?
Okay, you grab. I watched you grab the bottle, and you turned around toward him.
That's all Sutra said, for I didn't see you.
Okay. We don't stamp for that up here, man. You know you don't do that.
Who else is gonna protect me?
Call the police.
Hey, I'm Farai Chidea. That's from the reality TV show Cops. And this guy, Danger, clearly doesn't believe the police are going to protect him.
No.
Millions of Americans feel the same way. Not just that the police won't protect him, but that the criminal justice system just operates on money, power, racism, all those things. Race, of course, does affect the system. So does money. System's flawed. So would you sabotage it? Would you actually go ahead and basically say, okay, these rules don't work, they shouldn't apply? Paul Butler has some controversial ideas on that subject. He's a law professor at George Washington University and a former federal prosecutor. Paul, it's great to talk to you again. And you've got this new book called Let's Get Free, A Hip-Hop Theory of Justice. I'm going to get to the hip-hop part of that in a second, but you start out in this book telling us a story about how your path changed as a prosecutor who got caught up in the legal system for something you were acquitted of. But it's a great story. Tell us, first of all, about Detroit.
Detroit, Farai, was my neighbor. I'd taken a job with the Department of Justice, wanted to kind of be the avenger, do the right thing. So I left my fancy well-paying law firm job and moved to a neighborhood that I could afford in my government salary. And Detroit was a woman who lived across the parking lot from me, who was renting a parking space that became the subject of this big dispute.
So she's someone who, and you're very, literary about the way that you describe her, this big-boned, not very attractive woman who ultimately ended up in a conflict, in a dispute with you over a parking spot, ended up sabotaging someone else's car, but then saying that you were the one who attacked her. So what was it?
She called the police and said that I'd pushed her and that she'd fallen down. And it was just a silly story, but for whatever reason, I don't know, you now go back and wonder, did part of it have to do with the fact that I'm an African-American man? At that time, I was a young African-American man. So the police came, and they kind of summarily arrested me. They arrested me for a crime that I didn't commit. It was a misdemeanor. And the only difference, that's a familiar story in the African-American community, and the only difference for was that I happened to be a prosecutor at the time that I was arrested.
Big difference.
You know, you talk about how you could afford a great lawyer, how your colleagues didn't turn their backs on you. But still, did you feel powerless, when you were arrested on what turned out to be a false charge?
Well, I'll tell you, the name of the case was the United States of America versus Paul Butler. And in that situation, you got to feel a little bit powerless. So, I knew that I was in a better situation than virtually anybody could be who was charged with a crime like this, because I could afford the best lawyer in town. I had connections. I had legal skills. I knew how to present myself to a jury. And, by the way, I was innocent. And that last fact, it didn't really seem like the most important. And that really opened my eyes to a lot of the concerns that I was developing about the criminal justice system anyway from my day-to-day work of locking up people, putting people in prison. Even then, I'd started to question how much good I was really doing for communities. But when I got caught up, it opened my eyes in a whole different way.
Paul, you sound like such a nice, reasonable man. And then you go ahead and talk about things like jury nullification and basically throwing a spanner, into the justice system. Not just, kind of incremental change, but you know what? We're just going to roll with this right now. Give me an example of what you think people have a right to do. I mean,
well, what the Constitution says, Farai, is that if there's a crime that someone's charged with, and for some reason the jurors think that the prosecution is unfair, or the person shouldn't be punished because the law is unfair, then the juror doesn't have to convict, even if technically the person's guilty. So that's called jury nullification. It's a proud part of our constitutional history. I think the best cases are back in the day when slavery was legal, and it was actually a crime to help a slave escape. So people would be put on trial for that crime. And in the North, jurors would always acquit. Even though the person was technically guilty of the crime, they just didn't think that the law was fair. And so the Supreme Court had many occasions to review it, always said it's a power that jurors have, although this is where it gets bizarre. The law is that jurors don't have to be told about this power. And so that's what I'm doing in Let's Get Free for Ryan John. I'm telling jurors about this secret power they have. If they think the law is unfair, they don't have to apply it just because some prosecutor says they should.
Instructions to the jury from Paul Butler in his book, Let's Get Free, A Hip-Hop Theory of Justice. And what's so fascinating about this narrative, Paul, to me, and one of many things, is that this is really a conflict of profiles that you fit. You fit the profile of the incredibly successful, fast-track, African-American legal sort of litigator and scholar on the way up, right?
Yes.
And you also fit this urban African-American profile of a male. You even describe it yourself as someone with a chip on his shoulder. And you explore that profile by talking about how pop culture figures within the African-American community who some would say, and you have argued persuasively, have been targets of the criminal justice system, ending up in prison as a result. And they have absorbed that experience and, you know, projected a certain coolness for having gone to prison. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, you know.
Well, the question to you is, do you feel cool for having been locked up even for the short amount of time, even though you were acquitted?
I feel like the experience made a man out of me, John. It made a black man out of me. And it connected me to a lot of people who, I have to say, going to schools like Yale and Harvard Law School, working in big fancy law firms, I hadn't felt all that close to. And at the end of the day, what that experience taught me is that when the police look at me, what they see is a young African-American man. And the experience made me own up to what that meant. And frankly, I think it instilled me with a sense of responsibility.
I want to ask you about, there's so much to this, but let's talk about Stop Snitching. There's this movement, there's even a DVD with this really raw title, essentially Stop Effing Snitching. And then the Baltimore police responded with a video called Keep Talking. So, you know, how does the Stop Snitching movement relate to what you're talking about jury nullification? Do you believe that Stop Snitching is good or destructive?
Well, I think witnessing is different from snitching. So if there's a crime of violence or a property crime, then it's absolutely appropriate for citizens to call the police and report. If, on the other hand, you get something like a break in your own criminal case or money for reporting somebody else, then I think we have to be thoughtful about whether that advances public safety and about whether that makes communities whole. And what was happening in Baltimore, which has an extraordinary rate of incarceration, almost half of the young black men have a criminal case, usually a drug case. What that means, Farai, is that in those communities, everybody has some incentive to rat out everybody else. And it turns out that undermines the social fabric. You know, it's like one of those old Eastern European societies where everybody's got something against someone else, so everyone's looking for a deal or a way to curry favor with the government.
You know,
that
Paul,
turns out to make communities less safe.
I'm not trying to pat you on the back, and you know, we're rest on the clock on this show all the time. But you know, should someone like you be on the Supreme Court? Someone with these kinds of views of change, of pushing the sort of political dimension of the jury system, be on the Supreme Court? There's a vacancy, you know.
Well, if you're recommending me, John, I'll accept the position. This is something that lawyers love to speculate about. So I suspect that the people who the president considers will have more moderate views than I. But a lot of the people whose names have been in the paper have the same concerns about the 2 million people who are locked up in our criminal justice system that I have. So they know that this warehousing, what President Obama called this counterproductive warehousing of nonviolent offenders, isn't the way to go. So I'm hoping that they'll use the Constitution to create some solutions.
Well, Paul, you have you're going to get a lot of people hot under the collar. Many thanks. We were talking with Paul Butler, law professor at George Washington University. New book is Let's Get Free, A Hip-Hop Theory of Justice. My son got knocked. Evidently, it's elementary. They want us all gone eventually. Trooping out of state for a plate. Knowledge, if coke was cooked without the guy.